Veterans Radio is brought to you by U.S. Wings, and today's program is dedicated to the members of the United States Navy, and especially their Navy HAL 3 Seawolves.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Cronberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. I'm really excited to have you listening today. And for those of you that are interested, you can go to our website and also watch us on a webcast. And we're going to be having a part two of our program with Charlie Morris, just a regular guy. He's going to be on in just a moment, and I'll give you a kind of a recap of what we talked about a couple of weeks ago with Charlie. But he's such a great guest, and we got such a great response, we decided that it was really important for Charlie to be back on. A couple of things that are going on in the world right now I wanted to talk about, especially locally here in the Ann Arbor area. We are coming to you from WDEO, our home studio here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And just down the road is the Yankee Air Museum down in Ypsilanti, Willow Run. And today is the beginning of Thunder Over Michigan. And Thunder Over Michigan is an air show being held at the Willow Run Air Force at the Yankee Air Museum. And you've got time to listen to our program here and then get over there. It starts at 11:40 is when all of the big things happen. All right, take that back. 10:30, there's a World War II European battle reenactment that's going to have some P-51 Mustangs there. At 11:40, the air show starts with the national anthem, and let me just kind of go through with some of the things that are going to be there. This is today and tomorrow at Willow Run Airport at the Thunder Over Michigan, so get on down there. If you've got some kids, they get in free if they're really little, and I think it's $15 for admission, but you can't beat this show. They're going to have some F-16s. What do we got? We got B-1B, Lancer Flyby. We've got MiG-17, the A-4B Skyhawks. We've got Zero Acro Demo, the A-6M-2. We got a Stealth Bomber Flyby, Saturday only, so you got to get out there for that. We got a couple of World War II Pacific battles with Corsairs versus some Zeros. We got a Corsair demo. We've got a 1911 Eli Curtis Pusher Flybys. These are biplanes. And then the big finale for that program are the Blue Angels. And the Blue Angels are going to be having their demo, and they're also going to do what they call a C-130 Fat Albert demo. And I'm not sure what that is, but I'm hoping to get over there this morning and see what all that is about. So that's the Thunder Over Michigan at the Yankee Air Museum at Willow Run Airport. That's today, July 23rd. So make sure you get over there. And these are great guys. They've supported Veterans Radio, and so we wanted to make sure that we support them too. If you have an activity that's going on that you'd like us to talk about here on Veterans Radio, give us a call, 877-573-7825. It's 877-573-7825. Or you can go online to veteransradio.net, click on contact, and we will do everything we can to get your event on the air so that we can talk about it. Another thing I wanted to talk about, and I didn't have an opportunity to look up his name, this is just a quick political comment, and as our people will tell you at the end of the program, the opinions that are voiced on Veterans Radio aren't necessarily those of your station. There was a senator this last week who attempted to introduce a legislation that would have eliminated some of the presumptive disabilities for exposure to Agent Orange. And I want to thank the veterans community out there, and we're going to call this new segment of our program something along the lines of, "What are you thinking?" And he was the one that wanted to eliminate some of these presumptive disabilities for Agent Orange. But evidently there was a massive influx of emails and phone calls to all of their senators, and it was finally taken off the board. It was not voted on. So thanks to all of you out there. And, you know, one of our mission statements here at Veterans Radio is if you really wanted people to join the military, you'd better take care of them. That's according to George Washington. That's a very short paraphrase of one of our mission statements, you know. People aren't going to join up if you don't take care of them. And we're going to be talking, as I mentioned in a little bit, with Charlie Morris and see how the VA took care of Charlie, what happened with him. Each week on Veterans Radio, we like to welcome home troops from around the world, no matter where they are serving. We're fortunate these days that people are starting to come home, and we're just hoping that this is a segmented program that sometime we can eliminate, because all of our men and women will be home safely. So on behalf of a grateful nation and all of us here at Veterans Radio, welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and of course everybody is familiar with Anchors Away, and we're going to be talking with a Navy guy today. That's Charlie Morris. And I just want to read something from Charlie's book to you. Last time he was on, we talked about Charlie was wounded as a crew chief on a Navy helicopter, and he's got a line in his book that I wanted to read to you. His book is called Just a Regular Guy, and it starts off, I'll give you a little background on this, and Charlie can jump in if he wants to correct me. But they had flown down a riverbank, and the pilots made one of the newbie errors. They turned around and went back the same route. And the first time he went by the village, there were all kinds of people out running around. The second time they headed back toward the village, nobody was around, except for a guy standing next to a hooch with an AK-47. And Charlie got hit. And the paragraph I just want to read here is called, it said, it was bad enough I'd been shot and passed out, but even worse was the fact that when I passed out, I fell forward out of the door, and the length of my homemade seatbelt allowed me to fall right out of the helicopter. So here I was, shot, unconscious, and hanging by a seatbelt on the skid under my helicopter. Now, even though I was unconscious, I can still remember that I was able to think. And what I thought at that particular moment was, I'm going to die. I actually started feeling euphoric and thought that dying wasn't too bad, really. Then I caught myself and said, wait a minute, you've got to open your eyes. I was probably unconscious for only a minute or so, and I forced myself to open my eyes, and when I did, I realized that my situation was even worse than I had imagined. Now I knew I was going to die. I looked up and saw the door gunner leaning out the door trying to pull me in. I looked down and could see that we were climbing rapidly to get out of the range of the sniper. And I looked at the tail section of my helicopter, and it looked like somebody had sprayed it with red paint. Only it wasn't paint. It was my blood. Charlie Morris, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Adil. Thanks for reading that. That pretty much describes it. Yes, sir.
I can only imagine how difficult it must be for you to hear that, you know, that paragraph or even those thoughts coming back into your head.
Well, it was. It took me back. I didn't know what paragraph you were going to read, and it did take me back for a second. Yes, sir. And I can't only explain it that it was a blessing. I mean, my seatbelt was four seatbelts hooked together, because last time you thought I was on a monkey strap, and I didn't. I burnt my monkey strap by throwing a hot barrel on it, so I made my own strap to get around the helicopter. Yeah, and it was four straps. And what was amazing is I fell out going forward and woke up facing the helicopter. So somehow I did a 180. And that doggone strap cut got under my arms and held me there for 10 or 15 miles back to the Navy base so they could hover and get me on a gurney.
Well, I can only imagine what that must have, the sensation of that, Charlie. I mean, I rode a McGuire rig once out of the jungle, and it was the most exciting thing I'd ever done in my life, but also the most frightening. And here you are, you're semi-conscious, and you're flying along at what, 2,000, 2,500 feet to get out of the effective fire of sniper fire. And so now let's kind of go through, where did they take you next?
Oh, they took me to the naval base, and they said where our helicopter detachment was. We thought we had a doctor, and they didn't, but he was a corpsman, and he got on and started applying pressure bandages and things to my head. We landed on just the hospital by our home base, and then TUI and third surge, and they had a hospital, but nobody could work on me. So then I ended up in Long Bend, Army Hospital, and another blessing that they had a brain surgeon that could operate on me right there.
Right, and that was one of the few brain surgeons in country, wasn't he?
Yes, sir.
And
they told me before they would have patched me up and operated on me in Japan.
Can you describe your wound to our audience? I mean, I know some of the details, but better if you told it.
I had my helmet described to me after my friend got home, and it had a small bullet hole going in the back underneath, and a large section of it blown out on the top. So a bullet went through my head and crossed my brain, and there is a band that on the left side of the brain that operates the right side of the body and the speech and all this stuff, and it hit that and loaded it up with shell fragments and bone fragments. And that's what they did, was cut out part of my skull and then took out part of my brain so it wouldn't get infected and things. They couldn't, the surgeons said that they couldn't pick all the fragments out. In fact, in 2008, I found out that I still have shell fragments in the brain.
I was going to say, you're probably still setting off metal detectors someplace
else. Well, not as bad, but they wanted to give me an MRI, and they found at the CAT scan that I had some shell fragments. And this hospital gave me the MRI anyways, but I had a panic button if I felt hot or pulling on my head. So.
God. We're talking with Charlie Morris, who's the author of a book called Just a Regular Guy, Navy crew chief on a helicopter, got shot in the head, and ended up being paralyzed on your right side for a while, and was sent to Long Bend Hospital in 3 Corps in Vietnam. We'll give you a little geography lesson here. He was down in 4 Corps, down in the Delta. From Long Bend, where did you go?
An Air Force hospital in Japan. And I don't have my book, and I can't remember the name. But the naval hospital was like full, and they sent me to this Air Force hospital, and they were excellent again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I first got a little bit of movement. I could lift my leg about 6 inches or a foot off the bed, and that was the most exciting thing that ever happened to me, probably.
I can only imagine. That was because prior to that, you hadn't been able to move anything on your right side?
No, sir. In fact, they kind of gave up on me in Long Bend. That young man would come every day to work with me, and he said, "Try to move, try to move." And I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, you're not trying." And I tried every day. So after he left, I still tried to move my arm. You know, I'd move my right arm with my left arm, my right leg with my left leg, something. And they thought maybe it wasn't coming back. And so that was really an exciting day. I probably wore myself out just lifting that leg and showing everybody that passed.
See, I can do this. I can do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's sort of the I don't know what you want to call it. How you've reacted your whole life. As soon as somebody told you you couldn't do something, you decided you would just for spite, right?
Yeah, exactly. I hated to hear I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. And in the book, I talked about when I woke up in Long Bend, and the man said, well, you know, the young guy, he's with me in the recovery room, said, "Now, Charlie, don't worry that you've been shot in the head and you're paralyzed on your right side and you can't speak." And I thought, well, I haven't even tried to say anything. And I tried, and I really couldn't. It was so frustrating. And I said a four-letter word. I started the sound, and I wouldn't give up until the other two letters came out. And that guy just laughed and laughed, and he came to my hospital bed just before I was in Japan. He said, "I knew you were going to be okay." He said, "I've never had anybody cuss at me before when they came out of the surgery." So,
well, it just showed that you were still there. And I think that's really important. I've talked with some other people that had similar experiences, and they said that they thought they were talking, but nothing was coming out.
Oh, well, It was like I knew what I was going to say, and my tongue wouldn't work.
Right.
Yeah. And then, and then after that, I went to the Great Lakes Naval Hospital, where I had the most outstanding physical therapist and the brain surgeons and things. It just, I would have stayed there until I was better, if they would have let me, but they wouldn't.
Well, it sounds like you had a great experience there at Great Lakes, and in fact, that was kind of like going back. That's where you went through basic training, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. Yes.
And your family was able to see you there?
My wife had a little Volkswagen, and even in the dead of winter, her and her mom and dad would drive every weekend or every other weekend to see me in the hospital. And it was really something.
That's so important.
Yes, yes.
To have that support.
Oh, yes.
Of your family.
Yes, the friends and family and my church. Our church had another church right there close to the hospital, and their ministers would come and see me all the time. And one of the men worked for the phone company and fixed it up so Fanny and I could talk every other, you know, a couple of nights without having to be charged and stuff.
Oh.
It was really a good place, and to learn how to walk, you know, the arm never came back really good,
mm-hmm.
But to learn how to walk, and our physical therapist would stay after and take us to the pool, and we could swim a couple of days a week. And we had a Ward 8 was a hopping place.
Yeah, you talk about it. I'm talking with Charlie Morris, who's written a book about his experience called Just a Regular Guy, which you can get at Amazon and a number of other places. Just go on there and plug in his name or Just a Regular Guy, and you could get it. I strongly recommend that you read this book. It was really inspiring to me. And to many other people out there, I think that you'll all be, because there's a lot of regular guys out there that have served in the military over the centuries, and you know, you just do what you have to do, and then somebody tells you that you're not going to get better, and you say, yeah, well, watch me. it kind of changes your attitude. And also, I wanted to talk to people out there about going and visiting these men and women that are hospitalized right now that are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, or any of the older, many of the Vietnam veterans, unfortunately, were aging now and are ending up in the hospital. So if you get an opportunity, go in and visit them. You can't imagine the effect that it has on the patient themselves. And so anyway, that's my plug for my community service for this week.
All right.
There you go. All right, so we're at Great Lakes, and unfortunately they won't let you stay there.
No.
What were the options that they gave you?
Nothing.
Okay.
I had to go to the VA hospital in Cleveland.
And did they discharge you, or did you? There's a matter of semantics here, I know, but I'm just trying to get.
Yeah, they were going to discharge me, and that's when the Navy said, "Well, you can't stay here. If you were discharged, you have to go to the VA."
Mm-hmm.
So in June of '71, I went to the VA hospital in Cleveland, and it just was a different kind of place, and I'm not going to say if it's bad or good. It just a whole different rules. They took your clothes away from you, and you could only get them on the weekend if you had a doctor's thing, and it was just it was so different from the Naval Hospital that it wasn't a place that I wanted to be. Until I met the lady that helped me with my reading skills and brain function.
Okay. Are you moving away from your phone a little?
Oh, I might have.
Okay. Because we were starting to get a little echo there, but that's okay. I want to point out again to our audience that the VA, the reputation of the VA hospitals in the early 70s wasn't the best. Let's put it that way. And it was different than being in, you know, whatever branch of the services hospital that you were in. So you were in the VA hospital in Cleveland. You were back home again. And so what progress did you make, or what were they doing to help you out?
They had the physical therapy, and I continued that after the stay in the hospital, and also the therapist that did my reading skills and things. Like I said, I the last one, that I only had seventh grade of learning ability, and I had this idea that, okay, I wanted to go to college, and she said, well, you know, I don't think you can go to college. And when she told me about what happened and my reading skills, I said, well, then, you know, she said, but you wanted to go. And they were going to let you go. And I said, well, I'll stay if you can, you know, please fix me.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked, even after I left, I would go up there and we'd work all summer. And by the fall, she had me at 13-plus reading skills and things. And she thought, she even helped me apply for the college. Vocational rehabilitation.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I couldn't go that year, the 71, because I still didn't have my plate. The 70s, they made you wait a whole year before they put a plate in your head.
All right. So they what kind of plate is it?
It's plexiglass. It's really neat. Well, I, you know, that's what I think. I think it's funny.
You know, it's like I have a hip replacement that titanium, you know, and I go, I got titanium, you know.
Well, they told me this is really, they said, Charlie, you, in fact, I went all the way back to Great Lakes to have them put it in. Because I watched for 6 months or 5 months, I've watched those guys come back for plates and stuff. I said, you guys are so good. I said, you make like you're changing spark plugs, you know, you're still.
I don't mean to laugh. It's amazing what they can do.
Yeah, and so the plexiglass, I don't get affected by heat or cold like the metal plate.
Okay.
And he said that it's so strong that somebody could hit, you know, you could hit yourself in the head with a hammer, and they're not hurt. But he said don't.
I wouldn't recommend that either.
Yeah.
It's bad enough that you go out and play golf and tennis and all those other things with all the balls flying around. If anybody plays golf like I do.
Oh, yeah.
Have to stay inside. We're talking with Charlie Morris here on Veterans Radio. If you have any questions or comments that you'd like to make, give us a call here at 877-573-7825. It's 877-573-7825. For those of you that are looking for the Military Writers Society of America nominees, we're going to be having you on at 45 minutes past the hour. So Charlie, I was reading last night, I saw that they rated you for disability at 230%.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, they don't pay you at 230%.
No. No, they pay you 100%, and now I'm at a letter instead of a number.
Oh, okay.
I'm an M.
You're an M.
I'm high L, so they pay me M. So whatever that means. But it's a way that they can pay you more than 100%.
Okay. Yes. I'm fascinated, Charlie. You went back to college at Kent State in what, 72?
Yes.
That was a pretty active place at that time. I mean, it was after the Kent State shootings. But what was it like to go back to school there?
I didn't pay much attention. I know that once I was approached by a Vietnam vet against the war, and asked if, you know, he said, oh, if you join, we'll have somebody. And I said, you won't find anybody that hates the war more than me, but I have friends over there, and there's brothers over there, and I am not protesting against the war.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not, you know, I didn't do anything, you know, or say anything to him, but I didn't feel that was a proper thing to do. And I met some guys. They had a Vietnam vet program, a group that met and stuff at the bars. So that's who I hung out with, and in my business classes and things. It was. It was a kind of, you know, I mean, you had a group that was like the group you left, almost.
Right, I found that. I just wanted to, I guess I could say, point out, you know, that many of us, when we came back, we were pretty conflicted as to whether, you know, to support or not support, or to protest or not to protest, you know, and Charlie, I thought you said that very plainly, that even though you might be against what was going on over there, you still had friends, you still had that camaraderie and the loyalty to your fellow veterans. And I know a similar experience that you kind of drifted over toward veterans when you did get home, because most people didn't understand anyway.
No,
I mean, civilians can. It's very difficult for civilians to understand war in the first place. And to try, you know, because they always want to ask you questions about it. And I found that it sounds like with you, I didn't want to talk about it with people that didn't understand.
Right.
That makes sense. Anyway, we're coming up to the bottom of the hour here, and we're talking with Charlie Morris, and we will be back with him right after we go through our Medal of Honor series at the bottom of the hour. So if you have a question, you'd like to ask Charlie a question, give us a call here at 877-573-7825. Charlie Morris, author of Just a Regular Guy. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Lance Corporal Roy Wheat threw himself on an anti-personnel mine to save his fellow Marines. Details after this.
You have your boots on, you're wet, you're cold. You feel like it's the land of time for God. Drill instructors all over the place. They're like lying. And you ask yourself, my God, what did I get myself into? Your body's screaming, but your mind and your heart tells you, keep on going. Don't give up. You question yourself, do I have what it takes to become a United States Marine? In the back of my mind, I knew I was not going to quit on myself. And when you stand there on the parade deck and that drill instructor comes in front of you, the one that made you better, holds out his hand, shakes your hand, and they call you brother, call you Marine, you break down in tears.
Private Ramon Hernandez became a United States Marine. Can you? Call 1-800-MARINES. Maybe you could be one of the few and the proud.
Wheat and two other Marines were assigned the mission of providing security for a Navy construction battalion crane and crew operating along Liberty Road in the Quang province. After the Marines had set up security positions in a tree line adjacent to the work site, Wheat reconnoitered the area to the rear of their location for the possible presence of guerrillas. He then returned to within 10 feet of their friendly position and here, unintentionally, triggered a well-concealed, bounding-type anti-personnel mine. Immediately, a hissing sound was heard, which was identified by the three Marines as that of a burning time fuse. Shouting a warning to his comrades, Wheat, in a valiant act of heroism, hurled himself upon the mine, absorbing the tremendous impact of the explosion with his body. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Iraq, Afghanistan, and other qualified veterans, your country needed you. Now the veterans of foreign wars need you. The VFW is not an organization where members sit around and tell war stories. We are advocates for those who serve. We fought for the new GI Bill, and you can be part of our next win. We are your peers, and we want you to be one of us. Your membership is free the first year, so contact Graf O'Hara Post 423 at VFW423.org. That's VFW423.org.
We're back on Veterans Radio, and I wanted to just talk briefly about it. One of our sponsors lets you know all about U.S. Wings. In fact, U.S. Wings is the manufacturer of the best leather jackets in America, and they're all made in America, which I just learned the other day while looking through their website. That's U.S. Wings out of Hudson, Ohio, down there where Charlie is. And their deal of the day, this is something you can't do without. You get a pilot survival knife. Go to uswings.com and you can find the deal of the day. It's it's pilot's survival knife. It's got the little serrated saw on the back of it. It's got a non-slip leather handle. I found one of these. My dad used to have one of these. So I think they're kind of cool. So go to US Wings and check out all of their equipment and their jackets. As I mentioned, US Wings has got the finest leather jackets in the world, and they're manufactured right here in America. We're talking with Charlie Morris here on Veterans Radio today, and I just wanted to briefly go back. And Charlie, we went to Kent State starting in 1972, and you majored in, and what did you major in?
It was a distributed education, and then they changed it to a marketing education and basic business education, like business law and accounting and things.
And what did you want to do with that degree?
Oh, teach high school.
What?
Teach high school. Yeah.
Most people, what, are you crazy?
Yeah. But you know what? All in all, I loved the high school years, and I loved helping the kids. And some of the kids felt bad and thought that I retired early because of them, but really it was the bout with post-traumatic stress. It getting over all that physical stuff was much easier than dealing with the mental side of the war.
Well, again, as I mentioned, we're talking with Charlie Morris, author of Just a Regular Guy, and talk about some of the issues you had with you know, losing your temper and some other things that went on with that. And I'm sure that was difficult, because I know I taught middle school for a while when I got back, probably with the same motivation, you know, you're going to help kids and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. And sometimes they would just, it got a little frustrating.
Yes. Well, and...
Go ahead.
I'm going to have to tell you, after the hospital, before college, I slept with a loaded gun under my bed and a big knife above.
Oh.
And I thought it was normal. I had a really great thing happen during college. I had the birth of my son, Matthew, and mm-hmm. I thought things would get better. But I always had nightmares. I always had night sweats. Sometimes I'd have night terrors.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't sleep much. I would teach school some days with less than 2 hours sleep per night.
That's hard to do.
And I do okay at school. But my home life really suffered. PTSD, you not only have all the nightmares and distrust and everything, but you have a lot of anger issues also.
Mm-hmm.
And it affected my home, and it started affecting my teaching also. I had friends that would tell me about PTSD and what they were doing in the early 80s, and I didn't want to hear about it. I thought, you know, PTSD is something somebody made up, and I didn't need to worry about one more thing.
Right. I think there were many of us that felt that same thing, that somebody just made this up. And I guess it's called denial.
Yes. And finally, when I lost my temper at school, and the home life was just falling apart, I finally went in the late fall of 87. I finally went to the post-traumatic stress clinic at the VA hospital in Brecksville.
And how did that, obviously that probably went well. Tell me a little bit about what occurred there.
Oh, well, you had to take all those tests and everything. And of course, Charlie Morse, the teacher, showed up for the appointment, and the lady would say, "Oh, Charlie, I think just talking to you, I'm sure that we'd just schedule you for some outpatient classes, and you'll be fine." And then my test scores came back, and they called me at the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Charlie, it's worse than we thought. Your test scores came back, and we'd like you to come in to our program."
Now,
in-house program.
Okay, this was an in-house program. This wasn't outpatient.
Yes, for 8 weeks, yes.
Okay. And what was that like for you?
It was really tough at first. And as it's described in the book, it was like I didn't belong. And I was really hurt. And I had a friend that really yelled at me, my roommate. And I had the most terrible night's sleep I've ever had. And I woke up and I thought, he called me a quitter.
Mm.
And I woke up and my bed was just a mess, and the first thing out of my mouth said, I'm not a quitter. And I started to do the program in 88, and it was much better for a year or so. And then after I got out of the hospital, it kind of crept back, and finally I had to retire from teaching in 1995. But I have a little note that said I always had support from family and friends, and that was really, really important. There's so many guys that change, and especially you see it now where they go to war. We go to war and we come back and we're not the same people that went.
Mm-hmm.
And some people can't adjust to and help, and they just don't understand, so they leave us.
Right.
Franny was never like that.
Mm-hmm.
I had one. We were talking about relationships in one class I took. I had another about in, and I was in another inpatient. And they said, that little lady says, your wife must really love you. I says, either that or she's this much crazier than I am.
That's true. Well, where would we be without them? We got them. Yeah. it's interesting what you just said, is that I think it affects a lot of veterans when they come home, is that we don't think that we've changed.
Yes.
And everybody else around us tells us how much we've changed, and we're going, no, I'm fine, I'm just the same. It takes us a long time to realize that we have indeed, or whatever it is, our attitudes and so forth have changed quite a bit. I got a quick message here for you from a Jay Jenkins.
Oh, my gosh.
Jay wanted to say, hey, Charlie, how are you?
I'm fine, Jay, and thanks for writing. Yeah, he's our secretary for the VBA. In fact, I joined that, and I love it. And if you guys want to know what we do, you can always go to oh717.com and our website, and we're always working for veterans.
That's true.
And doing things for veterans.
There's a lot.
You wanted to talk about Pegasus Farms Vet Program, and we probably don't have time, but Pegasus Farms is an adaptive riding academy, and they have a program for veterans on Wednesdays, and it's free for vets.
And we're showing some photos of people that the riding program that you were talking about. We got about 2 minutes left, Charlie.
Okay.
So let's talk about some of the things that you're doing on a voluntary basis to help out other veterans. You mentioned being involved with the VVA and also Pegasus, which is kind of neat, I think.
Yes. Oh, it's an outstanding program. I started an adaptive tennis program, and I was hoping that vets would join, I used to do the brain injury groups and speak at brain injury groups, and hopefully that now that TBI is so pronounced in this war, that the vets will know that there's places outside of the VA they can go for help and support, and a place where they could feel at home. So the brain injury groups, the Aptus tennis, the VA, and Pegasus. I was on their board, but with balance. Oh, since my book, after my book, I had melanoma and lost hearing in the right ear, and I had all kinds of balance issues and things. So that now the physical stuff is starting to limit me. but it's okay. You know,
that's all right. Well, we all end up with some of those physical things.
Yes.
But it just sounds like you're so strong spiritually and mentally, Charlie. It's such a pleasure to always talk with you, and I'm looking forward to coming down in Ohio. Maybe we could play some tennis or some golf, because I know you could probably beat me with only one arm.
Oh, heck yes. No, I can't putt worth a poop. But
anyway, Charlie Morris, just a regular guy. I really encourage our audience to go out there and talk about the issues that are in this book. We're going to be talking about PTSD next week on Veterans Radio. So stick around, all you military writers, Society of America, we'll be talking to you. Charlie, thanks again, and we'll get in touch. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
We're back on Veterans Radio, another fine tune from our that long, long time ago era. And joining me on the phone right now is one of the vice presidents of the Military Writers Society of America, Mike, better known as Moon Mullins. Mike, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, Dale.
How are you doing?
Well, it's Saturday morning and way too hot.
That's true. Where are you located?
I'm in Winpole, Indiana right now.
All right. Well, our heat wave has kind of moved east a little bit.
Oh, it's been horrible the last few days. Don't even want to get out.
No, I know. Especially all the issues that we have as we get older. You don't want to go outside and even try to breathe in all that air. Well, anyway, we've got Mike on the program to talk about the nominees for the Military Writers Society of America, and I encourage our audience, if you like military books, to go to their website, militarywriters.com, and you're going to find some great, great books. And we're just going to talk about the nominees for this year's awards, and then later on in the year we'll have the winners on. And this is where I get a lot of my information and a lot of the books we've talked about here on Veterans Radio. So, Michael, let's get going.
Yeah, I'd like to preface this with the comment about our process. You know, every year it evolves, and I think we've got as clean and fair a process as I've ever seen. Jim Greenwald, our lead reviewer, and Joyce and the committee that they've worked with have worked on this so hard, and it's evolved. Our competition is so, so tough. And each year we have more books, and it's harder, and we have more reviewers, and the process is just enormous. And another huge number of entries this year, huge number of wonderful, wonderful writers and books. And Jim has, I can't tell you how hard that man works in keeping the material flowing. So I just want to give kudos to Jim Greenwald and would like everybody to realize how much time he puts in at this.
Well, I should mention for all of our audience, not just the military writers that are going to be listening in, but, you know, when did your organization begin?
Well, golly, now I'm going to have to go back and look. I don't have that right in front of me, but, you know. Reverend Bill McDonald started back in the 90s, and it's been coming forward for, my goodness, I'm not exactly sure how many years it is now.
I'm sure someone can call us in and bring us up to date on that, but I was just the point I was leading to is the success that you've been having has been leading to more and more books, and probably the quality of the books has been going up each year also. I'm just amazed. I've been fortunate enough to go to two of your conferences and hopefully go to this one that's coming up in Pittsburgh at the end of September. And I encourage many of our listeners, and I'm going to try and get Charlie's book over to you folks and have you look at it and review it, because I think it's something that you might be interested in.
I just sat here listening to him, and he sure took me back and made me think about some of the issues that we all face that are non-vets and any veteran.
Right.
There's a lot of the things that Charlie has walked through that are universal. And these soldiers that are coming back now are going to walk armpit deep in the same alligators.
Yes, they are. And we got to make sure that we're there to help them through it.
Absolutely. And they need to know we're their friends. So anyway, don't get me started on that.
I know. Well, if we have time, we can get off on that tangent. But right now, we need to get into these nominees. And I think the first one was, historical fiction, right?
Yes, sir. And I'll also say, anybody that's listening, if I mispronounce a name, if you come to a conference, don't hit me too hard.
Right. And these are in no particular order.
Mention when the conference is. It's in September 29th through October 2nd at Pittsburgh.
Correct. And if you go to militarywriters.com, you'll find out all that information and who to contact and just show up. There's going to be some great, great things going on there again.
Yes, sir. Historical fiction event, in no particular order for all of these, in each category. Beyond Those Hills by M.H.A. Menangi. David and the Mighty Eight by Marjorie Hodgson Parker. Victory Road by Mark Boland. The Cord and Snow by Richard Whitten Barnes. Once a Night by Walt Scheel. Long Look into the Abyss by A.R. Homer. Next, we have historical fiction, Chronicle, Shall Never See So Much by Gerald Gillis. Historical fiction protagonist, For Love of Country by William C. Hammond. Fiction mystery, Loose Ends Kill by Bob Doerr. Laos File by Dale A. Dye. Argo Pelter by Ronald Smith. I Know Why the Dogwoods Blush by Bill Kane. Next, we have fiction thriller, Project Dragon Slayers by Kathy Rowe. Pirates and Cartels by Lee and Vista Boyland. Sergeant Rock, The Lost Battalion, H.C. by Billy Tucci. The Mula Storm by Thomas W. Young. Then we have fiction, literary, The Book on the Wall by John F. Simpson. We have nonfiction history, Eisenhower and Montgomery by William Widener. Keeping the Promise by Donna Elliott. American Gorilla by Mark Gardia. Targeted Killing by Thomas B. Hunter. T-41 Mescalero, The Military Cessna 172 by Walt Scheil. Lost Eagles by Blaine L. Pardue. And we have nonfiction memoir, D.A.I. by Uli Hawk by David R. Hawk. Wing Wife by Marcia J. Sargent. Life Interrupted by War by Thomas Van Hees. Lullabies for Lieutenants by Franklin Cox. We Came to Fight a War by Jack Flynn and Alvin E. Cotler. Earning My Wings by Shirley Dobbins Forgan. And next we have nonfiction reference, Aerial Aces of the Universal Newsreel by Philip W. Stewart. And our next category is nonfiction biography, True Blue, A Tale of the Enemy Within by Joe Sanchez and Modanya. Women in the U.S. Armed Forces by Darlene M. Ixcra. Gray Eminence by Edward Cox. Beyond All Price by Carolyn Poling Schreiber. And our next category is nonfiction, How-To Business. Disability Compensation by Thomas Van Hees. Breastfeeding in Combat Boots by Rotman Roche Paul. Nonfiction, Creative Nonfiction, Gated Grief by Layla Levinson. Nonfiction, Spiritual Religious, God Plus Military Spouse by Lori Kathleen Klein. A Prayer Journey Through Deployment by Donna Moll. Bringing Courage to the Courageous by Don Williamson. I Want to Be the Fat Pretty One by Lori Kathleen Klein. Next, we have Artistic, Pictorial, USAF Interceptors by Mary Isham and Dee McLaren. Next, we have Poetry, Book Form, Through the Years by James Jellerson, Blooming Red by Carolyn Howard Johnson and Magdalena Ball, and Kings of the Green Jelly Moon by King, Greenwald, Jellerson, and Mullins. Next, we have Children, Ages 12 and Below, The Adventures of Brisky Bear by Steve Bolt, The Sandpiper's Game by Charles Boyle, Clinger by Betsy Beard, Our Daddy is Invincible by Shannon Maxwell, Eddie and Bingo, A Friendship Tale by Catherine and Kathleen L. Taylor. And we have our military categories. Military Air Force, Safe Landings by Fran McGraw, Bell of the Brawl by Gary A. Best, The Men Who Killed the Luftwaffe by J.A. Stout, Two Gold Coins and a Prayer by James H. Keith III. Next we have Military Army, Incoming by Jack Manick, Allen's Letters by Nancy E. Ryle, Still Standing by Jim Cosmo, The Sentinel and the Shooter by Douglas W. Bonnet, Inside the President's Helicopter by G.T. Boyd and Jay Boer, War Remains by Jeffrey Miller. Then we have Military the Marines, Obediently Yours, Orson Welles by Almon Bray. And we have Military Navy, The Seventh Angel by Jeff Edwards, The Untold Experiences by C. Gilbert Lowry, Listening to Ghosts by Robert Bob Stockton, and finally we have Military Coast Guard, Coast Guard by Tom Beard.
Whew, you did it.
Well, and we have one new group this year, sponsored by the Korean War Group. That's Korean War Book Awards this year. And this is something that is kind of a new project for us this year. You know, the Korean War, often called the Forgotten War, and we're trying to give some additional attention to these people. You know, they're pretty close to the same age.
Yep.
We got time to work these in?
No.
You got time to work these in?
We've got them up screen, and we'll get them out, but I can look at them real quick. We got the Chido's Road by Robert Ruendez.